tonight I want to shift our focus a little bit. Until now we've been talking about, we're still going to be within the sugya, the broad sugya of Ben Sora Remora, but whereas until now we've been mostly talking about Ben Sora Remora from the perspective of the Ben Sora Remora, namely what exactly did he do wrong, what is the culpability, what is the liability, etc., I want to shift now and view things in terms of the process of Ben Sora Remora. I guess you can phrase it as more of like a based in perspective on Ben Sora Remora, how exactly the process develops and how we understand that process. And that will probably take us for the next 2 weeks, possibly three, different, you know, components of this broader issue. But I want to begin tonight with an assessment of the Chiyuv of Malkus and its relationship to the punishment of Misa. We all know that Ben Sora Remora has capital punishment. That is indeed how it's described in Parshas Ki Tse, as we've seen multiple times. And that is what receives the greatest amount of press when it comes to Ben Sora Remora, right? The question is, why exactly are we putting this young man to death for a crime that doesn't seem to warrant a capital punishment? And we discussed at the very outset different perspectives on that, Nidon Hashem Sofo and the like. But in truth, if we would just view the punishment of Skila, the capital punishment that he receives, in line with the Torah Shebaal Chsav, we'd actually be skipping a major step of this entire process of Ben Sora Remora, because the Torah Shebaal Peh indicates that before you have a capital punishment with this whole Ben Sora Remora, there is actually a punishment, a corporal punishment, a punishment of Malkus, that occurs beforehand. So if you look in source number one, this is described by the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Daf Ayin Aleph Amud Aleph. This is a Mishnah that we also analyzed last week. It's, you know, obviously the same series of Mishnayos and Gemaras that we've been dealing with throughout, ranging from mostly Daf Samech Ches in Sanhedrin through Daf Ayin Beis, with also a Gemara Daf Samech Gimel, which we'll again revisit tonight. But the Mishnah, which begins with Haya Echad Me'am Gidei Mochiga Ro'ile Mosuma Ocheresh, begins with the discussion of the parents and all of the qualifications that need to be in place in order for the parents to bring their son to Beis Din, in order to set off the Ben Sora Remora procedure and process. That's what we focused on last week. If we look at the end of the Mishnah, and the underline in Source 1, the Mishnah says, Masrin bo bifnei shlosha umalkinoso. You give him hasra'a, you give him a warning. We know that hasra'a is a concept that doesn't only exist by Ben Sora Remora, it's a concept that exists b'chol ha'Torah kula, that if you want to deliver some kind of corporal or capital punishment, you need eidos and hasra'a, you need halachic witnesses, and you need a kosher halachic warning as well, with all sorts of different qualifications as to what exactly needs to be stipulated by those edim. We are going to have to assess whether or not the hasra described here, the warning that's described in this Mishnah, is the same as the hasra that is described in other areas of the Torah. We will see next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, that is a machlokas rishonim. But the Mishnah says, Masrin bo bifnei shlosha umalkinoso. You warn him in front of three, and you give him malchus. The Gemara goes on to explain that it doesn't literally mean you need warning in front of three. In most circumstances, warning, how many do you need? You need two. Al pi shenayim edim yakum davar. So you don't need three, you only need two. So the Gemara actually explains that it means you give him hasra'a in front of two, and then you go to a beis din of three in order to deliver malchus. Those are details that we'll hopefully discuss Be'ezrat Hashem next week. So for the first thing is you give him malchus. Chazar v'kilkel nidon be'asrim u'shlosha. If he then, afterwards, goes back to that same behavior, he repeats the same crime, he repeats the same sin, then you take him to a basin of 23 for the question of whether or not he's going to receive capital punishment. Ve'eino niskal et sheyuhusham shlosha harishonim shenemar b'neinu zeh zeh shalaka b'fneichem. The Mishnah at the end quotes a gzeiras hakosov that says that those three people who were there the first time need to be present for the second one as well. Again, another interesting detail that perhaps we will circle back to. The Gemara goes on to explain, Malkus b'Ben Sora Umora Heicha Ksiva. Where in the world do we find that the Ben Sora Umora receives corporal punishment, capital punishment? We know that that's described in the Pesukim themselves, but where does this corporal punishment come from? The Gemara answers, because Rabbi Abahu. It says Rabbi Abahu explains to Amar Rabbi Abahu, Lamanu v'yisru mi v'yisru, v'yisru mi ben, uben mi ben v'haya im bin hakos harasha. So that's a pretty cryptic line, and you got to follow the paper trail. So the paper trail is if you look at source number two, v'lakechu zikne ha'ira hi es ha'ish v'yisru oso. So you have the word v'yisru in the context of the ben sorer umore, that the zikne ha'ir take him. And then if you look in source three, dvarim chaf alef yirches, ki yel ha'ish ben sorer umore, inenu shumeh b'kol aviv b'kol imo, I'm sorry. V'lakechu zikne ha'ir is ha'ish v'yisru oso, that is in the context of Motzi Shemra. Thank you, Jerry. That is not in Benzor Mora. So we have the word V'yisru in the context of Motzi Shemra. In source number 3, Ki yela ish bein sorera marei, nena shomea b'kol aviv b'kol imo v'yisru osov lo yishma alehem. So his parents tell him off, and he doesn't listen to them. So we have the same word in the context of Benzor Mora. And then finally, V'haya im bin hakos harasha v'ipilo ha-shofet v'ikol ofanav k'teir shosob b'mispar. We have this im bin hakos harasha, that you shouldn't give him excessive punishment. So if you go through the various gzeira shava, you end up that there's a corporal punishment by the bensor umara. So there's this whole gzeira shava that teaches us that not only is there a capital punishment by the bensor umara, but there is corporal punishment as well. Now, one of the major questions. Yeah.
It seems like that's the pshat anyway. And
really?
Yeah. Well, sort of. I mean, there's really no other meaning to Yisro, though. And the only alternative shot that I can think of is that it would mean that the parents beat the child and they stole him and he stole it.
I think that's what you would say is. I think that's what you'd say is pshat. No, I mean Yisro doesn't. It's
no, I'm saying
to insert Basin in the middle. If I were just reading the Torah Shebachsav, that's what I would
right.
think.
So the pshat though is Yisro certainly it does actually mean Malchus. It's just the question of who's Malchus.
I would not have assumed from the psukim themselves that Beis Din is delivering some kind of malchus, right?
I think probably just like knowing that like we don't ever have any precedent for parents delivering malchus. Therefore, the only way to understand the pshat is to insert the word.
I don't know. Again, the gemara. That's not the gemara's. Well, I mean, you could argue again. This may go back to how you understand gzeira shava, and this is also something that we spoke about in our series on the Shorash and Mitzvah Sefer Mitzvos. But either way, I mean, we definitely have the Gzeira Shava to teach us that there is a corporal punishment here. I think most would assume that it's not pshat. That actually is going to be a material point for us in a moment. We'll see that certainly the Ramban assumes that it's not pshat. And I think, again, this is reading the Gemara, is that the Gemara assumes that it's not pshat. The Gemara is providing Gzeira Shava. We're learning it from the Yud Gimel Midos rather than the Pshuto Shel Mikra. And it's probably because, again, like V'yisru is probably meant to be taken, again, if I were just reading the Psukim without the assistance of Torah Shebaal Peh, I would have said it's just a description of what happened rather than some kind of formal punishment that the parents are delivering. It's a description of the scenario. And certainly you wouldn't say that pshat is V'yisru is referring to a different subject, i.e. based in, that doesn't appear in the pasuk itself.
Right. I mean, the Gemara, in order for the, I agree with you. I'm saying that the fact that V'yisru should mean malakos is just a question of what,
okay,
who the subject is, and given that the Gemara cannot,
like, then maybe that adds credence. But in any event, we do have a corporal punishment for the Ben Sorum. Now, a critical question is going to be, what exactly is the relationship between these two stages of the Bensorah Umura? From a conceptual standpoint, we can really adopt a variety of options, but in the broadest sense, we can adopt one of two perspectives here. One option is to say that these are really totally different punishments that are administered by Beis Din towards the Bensorah Umura. There are two different Isurim. First time, Malchus. Second time, Misa. But there are two really distinct, they should be viewed as distinct Isurim, and perhaps as distinct punishments from the Beis Din, unrelated, without any meaningful conceptual link unifying the two. The alternative is to view them as one broader continuum, one broader process of the Ben Sorah Umura, that they are linked one to the other. Now, there are different ways that you can formulate this, and we'll try to use a couple of more concrete formulations as we go on in this particular shiur, and we'll develop that further when we go into next shiur, and we'll make it more concrete as we analyze some of the Nafka Mina, or some more of the Nafka Mina, I should say. But broadly speaking, we can view these as two discrete or distinct elements, or we can view them as part of one continuum, with the Malchus leading up to the Misa, with the Misa requiring the Malchus as a prerequisite. And again, we'll see how some of these options are going to be fleshed out tonight and much more next week as well. But that is going to be one important conceptual question for us to address. And on, I guess, what's an abstract level, before we try to hammer it down with concrete nafkamina, we find, once again, this discussion appearing in the context of the broader discussion regarding the Azhara of Bensorah Umura. Now, we had a lengthy discussion of the Azhara of Bensorah Umura, what exactly is the source for this Isur, with lots of different possibilities that we saw in the Gemara, and the Yerushalmi, and the Rishonim. But this question of Malchus and Misa actually surfaces in an interesting way in the context of that discussion. Source number 5, is the Rambam in Misas Lo Saseh Kuf Tzadihei. So I think in our first or second shiur, we saw this source, and I mentioned then that we're going to be coming back to it. Because here the Rambam says something that surprised us then, is still surprising now, but we'll hopefully take a closer look at how exactly the Rambam justified it. We noted at the outset that the Rambam says the Azhara of Ben Tzora Umora is Lo Sochlu Al Adam. It's a pasuk that says, don't eat upon blood, which we noted the Gemara Sanhedrin on Daf Samach Gimel uses to teach us a whole host of different things. Lots of different things are learned from this pasuk. Now, one of the things that's learned from this pasuk, according to the Gemara Sanhedrin Samach Gimel, is the prohibition of Ben Tzora Umora. So in that sense, the Rambam, we noted, is unsurprising when he quotes Lo Sochlu Al Adam. However, the Rambam's quotation of Lo Sochlu Al Adam leads to one major problem, and that is the question of Lav Shebechlalos. The ninth shoresh of the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos is where he stipulates that if something is called a Lav Shebechlalos, namely one prohibition that has lots of different interpretations that teaches us many different things, you can't count that as one of the Tarayag Mitzvos. That shouldn't be counted as one of the 613. And indeed, the paradigmatic example of a Lav Shebechlalos is Lo Sochlu Al Adam. That is the paradigm for one pasuk that teaches us many different Yisurim. The Rambam, interestingly, includes other things. He includes the Pnei Iver. The Rambam includes like other interesting Isurim and how those are Lav Shebechlalos is part of the whole discussion of Shor Tess. But everyone agrees that Lo Sochlu Al Adam should be considered a paradigm of this principle of Lav Shebechlalos. So why in the world does the Rambam count it? So we noted that the Rambam himself seems to make a justification on the basis of the fact that the punishment for Ben Tzora Umora is Beforash Bakra. It's explicitly in the pasuk. And we'll see tonight that the Ramban is not so happy about that justification of the Rambam. Let's take a look at source number 5. Mitzvah kuf tzadihei, hisha his hiranu michyo zolo v'sobe b'ma'achal v'mishta, b'mei ha'na'aros u'b'tna'im ha'mito'arim b'ben tzora umoru, ku omri yisala lo sochlu al adam. First paragraph, the mitzvah slosa asay 195, is this commandment against this gluttonous hedonistic behavior, eating and drinking in one's youth, with all of these stipulations that are described regarding the ben tzora umora, and the pasuk that teaches us this is lo sochlu al adam. And we noted, again, the Rambam focuses on the Zolo Vesove component, but that's the Rambam counting the mitzvah itself. Then, look at the second paragraph that I have here. V'afal pisha zeh alav ulav shebeklalos, v'oshayana b'shorash hachi, even though, technically speaking, this is a lav shebeklalos, which teaches us many different things and really should not be counted, like I explained in the ninth shoresh of my Sefer HaMitzvos, gizeh no rachok, don't worry about it too much. Once you have something that is explicit in the pasuk, the Torah says explicitly that this young man receives capital punishment through skila. Once you have that, don't worry too much, don't sweat too much about what exactly the azhara comes from, whether it's an explicit azhara or a lav shebeklalos. And again, that we analyzed in a previous year. The Ramban does not like this Rambam, and he really doesn't like the justification of the Rambam. Look at source number 6. This is the Ramban's hasagos on the Rambam Sefer Mitzvos. This is the Ramban commenting on that mitzvah. I already explained in the second Shoresh, we noted again in the Shoreshim series, that the second Shoresh is perhaps the most controversial of the Rambam Shoreshim. Shehagdama shehiktim nishberes v'nifsedes. Now, this Hakdama that the Rambam wrote is violated, it's broken, that the Rambam doesn't keep to his own word when it comes to the Shorashim. The Gambazet Od Hefseid. And this is one instance, this is another instance, where the Rambam violates his own principles that he lays out in the Shorashim. She'achila rishon o'shel aventzoru mora, ein on shamisa ela malkus. K'mosha amru, masrin bo bifnei shnayim, u'malkanos o bifnei shlosha. That's the Gemara that continues on our Mishnah. Chazar v'neskavl nidu b'esru m'shlosha. Rambam, you just told me that what's your whole justification for counting this, even though it's a lav shebeklalos? The fact that the onesh is explicit. But the Ramban notes, that's not really true. That's not really true. Rambam, you're missing a major step of this entire process of Ben Tzora Umora. Yes, it is true, the Misa is explicitly mentioned in the Pasuk, but the Mishnah in Sanhedrin tells us that before you get to that stage, there's a punishment of Malkus. And you're going to need an Azhara on that as well. So Rambam, where in the world are you getting this Azhara from, of Lo Sochlu Al Adam? You want to build your justification of the inclusion of lav shebeklolos on the basis of the fact that there's an explicit punishment, there is no explicit punishment, at least as far as the first stage of Ensor Umor is concerned. So the Ramban rejects the Rambam's justification in terms of the explicit punishment. But the Ramban himself, right after asking that question, comes to the Rambam's defense. Jerry, you're going to say what the Ramban is going to say in a moment?
I have no idea.
The suspense is killing me, right? Aval nomar, she'af azharas achila rishona b'chlal lo soklu al adam. She'shtei ha'achilos mevios lishpoch dam. The Ramban says, in truth, even though the achila rishona does not have an explicit punishment written there, and even though it should technically be a lav shebeklalos, I'm willing to let the Rambam subsume this under lo soklu al adam, and I'm willing to let him count lo soklu al adam. Why? Because both achilos bring about this ultimate capital punishment. Shtei achilos bevios lishpok dam. The gambezu lo nachosh al ha'azharas tiyem in lav shebeklalos. He gives a second reason that he says that perhaps another reason why you don't have to worry about it is because here as well, the onesh is explicit. Why? Because of that gzeres shava that's quoted in the Gemara. Malchus also, gzeres shava is quoted as almost as explicit. Now the Ramban himself notes that second answer that he provides is not actually going to help for the Rambam, because the Rambam, and getting back to that Chorish Bay's point, would not agree that you can consider something from a Gzera Shava a sufficient source for something to be considered Meforash Bakra. But the critical point for us is that at least at the outset, the Ramban is willing to give the Rambam some leeway. He's willing to consider the Rambam's argument because of the fact that Shtei Ha'achilos Mevios Lishpoktam, because both of them bring about this ultimate capital punishment. Now the big question is going to be, how exactly do we interpret that line of the Ramban? If you want to really neutralize the significance of that line of the Ramban, you could say, in the most technical sense, it is true that you need both in order to create Shvichus Dam. Lemaisa, from a pure pragmatic standpoint, you'll never reach a point of capital punishment if you didn't first go through the stage of corporal punishment. But it's not that, conceptually speaking, they're part of one larger continuum. He's merely noting that in a purely pragmatic sense, you need to go through Malchus in order to reach Misa. You need to go through the corporal stage in order to reach the capital stage. That would be the most technical way of reading the Ramban. If you want to take the Ramban, and you'll see in a moment why I'm presenting that possibility, if you want to take the Ramban further, you'd say no. What the Ramban is suggesting here is that the Malchus and the Misa are indeed part of one larger continuum. Both of them really contribute to that larger goal of capital punishment. I mean, not a goal in the sense of something we aspire to, but that larger end game or end point. What? Yeah. Of Shvichos Dam, of Lishpok Damo, of capital punishment. And even though there's Malchus beforehand, that shouldn't be viewed as an entirely distinct stage or phase. It's part of the process of leading to the capital punishment. Now, in a vacuum, I would assume that second approach about asserting that there's an actual conceptual link here, that there's a real continuum between the two, is the one that is probably closer to what the Ramban is saying. Because if you're dealing with the question of whether or not the Malchus can be subsumed under the azhara of the capital punishment, presumably that's not just a question of technical considerations regarding pragmatically what has to happen. Presumably the Ramban there is saying that from a conceptual standpoint, there's one unified azhara because both of them are leading to the same point. So the Ramban here is making an assertion on behalf of the Rambam that there's one larger continuum. Now, of course, the Ramban himself, when he offers that second answer that says that Malchus also is explicit in the Pasuk because you have v'yisru oso, is perhaps leaving that idea aside. In the second answer of the Ramban, perhaps saying it's not one larger continuum, on the contrary. They should be viewed as two distinct phases, and that doesn't bother me because each one has an explicit punishment written in the Pasuk. One that's literally explicitly written in the Pasuk, and the other that's learned from Gzera Sheva, which for me, the Ramban, is sufficient to be considered Meforash Bakra. So we have two possibilities already in the Ramban regarding whether we should view this as one larger continuum. Now, confounding the issue is the second paragraph in this same Ramban, where he addresses a separate question, but one, at least regarding our broader conceptual question, should certainly be related, A separate question regarding how many mitzvot should be counted for Ben Zoru Mora. Should we count one mitzvah of Ben Zoru Mora, or perhaps two mitzvahs? One for Malchus, one for Misa. We know there are a number of circumstances where the Ramban says the Ramban doesn't agree with the Rambam's exact count. The Ramban counts certain things that shouldn't be counted. He at the end of the Sefer HaMitzvos, he adds all the things that he thinks the Rambam left out. And in certain circumstances, the Ramban says where the Rambam counted one mitzvah of Kriya Shema, he really should have counted two mitzvahs of Kriya Shema. So here as well, the Ramban addresses this question as to whether there should be one mitzvah or two mitzvahs. Source 6, second paragraph. The Harali L'Ha'alos Mizeh. And what seems fitting that emerges from all this. She'ach'ila harishona nimna'as ve'onsha malkos, ve'ashniya nimna'as ve'onsha misa. The first achila, the first time he goes wrong, the first time he goes astray, that is prohibited, and it has a punishment of Malkut, it has a corporal punishment. And the second time he does this, it's also prohibited, and it has a capital punishment for Onsha Misa. V'hein shtei minios b'cheshbon ha-mitzvos b'nichlelu b'lo soflu al-adam. And these should be two separate minios within the cheshbon ha-mitzvos, when we count the 613 mitzvos, even though they're both under lo soflu al-adam. That one pasuk serves as an azhara for both of these. And don't worry about lav shebeklolos, because as I said in my second answer, both of the punishments are mentioned in the Torah itself. So, he gives an interesting example, but the Ramban says, since they have two separate punishments, they should be counted as two separate mitzvos, and that's what the Rambam did by chametz and taruvas chametz. Now, of course, again, Yakir will be quick to point out that taruvas chametz, were you in Shiva Pesachim, Yakir? Well, you were not. So it's one of Rav Rosenzweig's favorite topics as to why exactly the Rambam counts it as a separate Isur, and the like. The Ramban is working with the basic assumption that the most basic component dividing chametz and taruvas chametz is the fact that there are two different onshim. So, whereas before I was saying the first answer of the Ramban seems to view both of them within a larger continuum, here within the second answer, the Ramban is saying that they should actually be viewed as two separate mitzvahs. And there's probably no greater expression of viewing these, at least conceptually, as two distinct phases, as saying that they should actually be two separate mitzvahs, one for the Malkus, one for the Misa. Now,
this would answer the question on the Ramban also, though. No? So you could say that when the Ramban is saying that it's not included, it's explicit, that's only referring to the second mitzvah, the one that you were put to death for, but the one that you actually get Malkus for would be included.
Alav Shabaklos.
And therefore, the Ramban's question wouldn't be a real question.
Interesting. I hear what you're saying. You're saying that in a chinami, the Rambam maybe thinks they're two separate mitzvahs also, right? The first one he can't count because it's a lav shebeklolos. The second one has an explicit description of the onesh, so he can include it. I did not think of that, but I hear what you're saying. I think that makes sense. Again, the Ramban thinks that you can count both because he thinks that the Ramban has an elevated view of gezeirah shava relative to the Rambam's view of gezeirah shava. I hear what you're saying. But at the very least, the Ramban raising this question, we potentially have a machlokas between the Ramban and the Rambam as to whether it should be viewed as one mitzvah or two mitzvahs. Ariel saying that perhaps even within the Rambam, even the Rambam can perhaps we can construct a way of justifying that the Rambam views it as two mitzvahs. But that is also a separate question. Now, how do you square these two paragraphs of the Ramban, one which says that they're all part of one larger continuum that leads to shtei ha'achilos mevios lishpoch damo, and the other which says they're two mitzvahs? So I think there are really three potential ways of dealing with it. One is to try to neutralize one option or the other. As I said at the outset, you can neutralize the first paragraph by saying when the Ramban says that both achilos bring to the capital punishment, he doesn't mean that conceptually they're viewed as one larger continuum, but rather he's just describing in a pragmatic sense you need to get through Malkus in order to reach Misa. I don't think that's so compelling in the Ramban, but it's one thing that you can say if you want to square it with the second paragraph. The alternative, instead of neutralizing the first paragraph, is to neutralize the second one. Yes, it is really true that conceptually they're part of one larger continuum. The Ramban is still willing to count them as two separate mitzvos merely because they have separate punishments. And again, that I think is a more compelling read of the Ramban. He says at the end, Kiyon she onesh zo malchus, onesh zo misa, yurashen shtei minyas b'cheshmon. You can claim that really, again, they're part of one larger continuum, but due to the technicality that each one has a separate punishment, the Ramban is still willing to count them as two separate mitzvos within the minyan taryag, within the 613 mitzvos. I think probably the easiest way to read the Ramban is that this whole second paragraph is dealing with that second answer that he provided before. The Ramban says that v'yisru is also explicit. That both stages, that Malchus is explicit through Gzeirah Shavah, and again, obviously it's not literally explicit, but he's saying it takes on the status of Meforash because of the fact that you have Gzeirah Shavah, and the capital punishment is actually explicit in the Psukim themselves. So if you take that second approach of the Ramban, then it fits that the Ramban counts them as two separate mitzvahs. But either way, what we have within this brief discussion of the Rambam and the Ramban is two important questions regarding whether or not we view them as one large continuum, or as two separate mitzvahs. The first issue is whether or not the explication of Misa is going to be enough to include the first Achila of Malchus. Do we say that there's two separate things? So when you Rambam say, Lav Sheba Klolos, it's not a Lav Sheba Klolos because its punishment is explicated, that can't help for the first time he ate, or do we say no? Like the Ramban says, Shtei HaAchilos Mevios L'Shpoktomo. They're really both leading to that ultimate capital punishment, and therefore they can both be considered... They both be considered an exception to Lav Sheba Klolos because of the fact that the punishment is explicated. And number two, should we count them as one mitzvah in the Sefer Mitzvahs, like the Rambam does? Like I would say, it's Pashas in the Rambam, Ariel's approach notwithstanding, that there's one mitzvah that incorporates both of them. Or like the Ramban is saying, should we view them as two separate mitzvahs? Similar discussion before we get to any concrete nafkamina. Bezos Hashem, we'll see some concrete nafkamina tonight, and as I said, we'll see a lot more next week. A similar question comes up in a discussion of Tosfos. Now, before we get into Tosfos, I just want to backtrack for a moment to discuss what exactly the Azhara is, and just review that for a moment. If you remember, in source number 7, I'm quoting again the Yerushalmi that we saw, that says, what is the Azhara for Menzoru Mora? Gana misha avav achab b'shusavim, misha lachim, achab b'shusachirim, etc., etc., etc. If you look at the last line, Gemara, Azhara l'gneva harishona minayin, lo tignov, Azhara l'gneva shniya minayin lo tignovu. So what is the azhara? What's the warning for the first time that he does this? The time that he receives the malchus? Lo tignov. And what is the warning for the second time that he does it? That he receives misa? Lo tignovu. Now within that, how exactly do we interpret that? Is that two separate? If we try to view that very short Yerushalmi within the framework of our question as to whether it's one larger continuum or two separate things, I'd say you could view that as two separate ways. On the one hand, I could see someone saying, you see from the Yerushalmi that they're two separate things. They both need two separate Azharas. The Azhara for the first one is Lo Signov. The Azhara for the second one is Lo Signov. Two separate Azharas, indicating that they're two separate, they should be viewed as two separate and discrete Isurim. Alternatively, what would you say? That when it says Lo Signovu, is that really adding a new Azhara? The Vav in Lo Signovu is adding a new Azhara? An alternative way to read the Yerushalmi is exactly the opposite. Lo Signov is the Azhara. Lo Signovu comes to tell you that don't think this Azhara is just limited to the first time, but it's expanded to the second time as well. It's not that that's a fully separate Azhara. It's just don't think that it's limited. Lo Signovu comes to teach you that it's perhaps more expansive than you initially would have thought. So I think you could really read the Yerushalmi either way. Jerry, you don't like the second way of reading the Yerushalmi?
They're like in different parashio. Like, why would you... It's already...
Is the second reading... Are you saying that Yerushalmi is referring to one pasuk? Is making a lima and extra.
That's what I was assuming. You're saying, Jerry, that perhaps it's two different. It's working within.
Saying,
that's the way I understood the Yerushalmi.
They're both referring to the Pasuk and Parsha Kedushim.
Right. And it's just Lo Signov versus Lo Signovu.
Sure.
I'm not sure. I hear what you're saying. I guess this would be reflective of those two readings of the Yerushalmi, depending on how you read the Psukim. Is Lo Signovu just the. In other words, I guess this actually better highlights the two ways I was understanding the Yerushalmi. I was almost assuming the second way that you were not assuming, Jerry. But when we say Lo Tignov and Lo Tignovu, are those two different psukim that we're referring to, or is that just all a drusha of Lo Signovu within the framework of Ben Soru Mora? If you're viewing them as two separate psukim, then you're likely to say that, they're two separate Azaros. Once again, like we were saying before, that's another indication these are two discrete and separate Isurim. If you view it as all within one pasuk and just expanding the original drasha, then you'll say that it's all within one azar. That's the Yerushalmi. We have a similar question that comes up within the Azhara of the Bavli. Source number 8. Azhara leben Zora umora minayin. Tama lomar lo soklu al adam. As we noted repeatedly, the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Samach Gimel says that the Azhara ben Zora umora is from what? It's from lo soklu al adam. Vam rabbi Abin bar rabbi Chia v'yitemer of Abin bar Kahana al kulam eino loka mishum tehavalei lav shabaklos. On all of these things that are mentioned here, all again we noted that on the Gemara Daf Samach Gimel, the pasuk of Lo Soklu Al Adam is used to teach us many, many, many different isurim. The Gemara then qualifies at the end and says all of these are not going to have a punishment of malchus. Why? Because it's a lav shebeklalos. One of the rules of lav shebeklalos is that there is no malchus. Tosfos raised the following question on this Gemara. Source number 9. Shim dehavei lav shebeklalos. Tema Tosfos say I have a big problem here. You're telling me that there is no malchus because this is a lav shebeklalos. Tosfos say, I have a different reason, I have a better reason why there isn't going to be any malchus here. Why? There's a lav shenitan le'azharas misas beistin. We have a rule that if you have a particular lav that's given to capital punishment, there's capital punishment on a particular los asay, you're never going to have malchus on that los asay because you have a larger punishment in play of capital punishment. You can't say, oh, like, we can't reach capital punishment, so let's give malchus. It's a lav shenitan le'azharas misas beistin. You can't give corporal punishment in that instance. And he says, lo sokol al adam is a lav shenitan le'azharas misas beistin. Why? Because of Ben Zora Umora. This is the Azhara for Ben Zora Umora. We know that Ben Zora Umora has a capital punishment, ultimately. And therefore, we have an entirely separate and distinct reason why you can't receive Malchus, because it is a Lav Shanitan Azharas Misas based. Then Tosfos go on to ask a different question, which maybe we'll circle back to. But that is the first question that Tosfos ask. Rabbi Akiva Eger, on Sanhedrin Daf Samach Gimel, right there, source 10, the Gilyon HaShas, is Tamu Ali. Ha-be'emes be-ben Zora lo ke-hecha de-lo yavo li de-misa, v'yafina la-mikra. Says, how can you say that lo soklu al-adam is a lav shenitan la-azharas misas beistin? We have instances where you can have Malchus for the Ben Zora Umora himself without a punishment of misa. So how can you tell me that it's lav shenitan la-azharas misas beistin if, clearly in this instance itself, you have cases where there's Malchus and without misa? Now, in this question on Tosfos, Akiva Eger is making a major assumption. He's assuming that you can actually have instances where there's Malchus, Hecha de lo yavo li de misa. Now,
I don't think that's an assumption. I mean, everyone agrees that if the guy doesn't do it.
Okay, what does Rabbi Akiva Eger mean by that? Does he mean there are certain circumstances where pragmatically it will not lead to misa, or there are cases where you can have Malchus where it cannot lead to misa? What is the circumstance where you can have Malchus where it cannot lead to Misa? Look at source number 11. Source number 11 is the Minchas Chinuch Reish Memchesa Sifkat and Chafalev. And the Minchas Chinuch raises the following question. Let's say you're dealing with a particular phase of Jewish history when there is no longer capital punishment. The Sanhedrin is no longer sitting in the Lishkas HaGazis in Yerushalayim, and they can't administer capital punishment. You certainly can't have any capital punishment, certainly not capital punishment for a Ben Zora Umora. In such an instance, would you have Malchus for his first violation? Or would we say that once there's no capital punishment, it's out the window entirely? That would seem to be a fantastic test case, a fantastic nafka mina, for exactly our question. If it's one large continuum, then it's possible to say that once you can't have that ultimate telos, that ultimate goal of, or that ultimate endpoint of capital punishment, then it's impossible to have that first phase as well. You can't have the corporal punishment either. If you view them as two entirely distinct things, then yes, it's true that you can't have capital punishment because the Beis Din is no longer present in Yerushalayim. But you can still have a corporal punishment if he messes up the first time. Source number 11. Nearly the afla achash agalu Sanhedrin, v'lo donun dine nefashos. Even after the Sanhedrin left its proper place in Yerushalayim and they can't judge any cases of capital punishment anymore, nonetheless, if you're just dealing with corporal punishment, you can have this any case where there's somebody who has smicha. Obviously, here we're talking about real halachic smicha, which we don't have anymore. But in a time where they still did have smicha, you'd be able to administer malchus. Indeed, if you know a little bit of the history of the whole smicha controversy that occurred in Tzfas during the 16th century, one of the major motivations for bringing back smicha was in order to administer malchus. There was a belief that in order to bring the Mashiach, you needed proper kapara for averos, and for full kapara for certain averos, what you needed was malchus. So one of the major motivations for bringing back smicha was in order to administer malchus.
Was that not also for the purpose of administering malchus to people who are chivikarius as well? Vaguely remember during this as well, meaning that they thought that they could use it to exculpate conversos who...
Oh, really? I don't remember. It's quite possible, and it makes sense. I mean, there's an interesting conversation about the relationship between Kares and Malchus, if you look in the third paragraph of Ksuvus, by the Kimle B'drab Mine Sugyas. That's a whole interesting discussion. But whatever the framework was for administering Malchus, that's what they wanted to do. The Menachos Chinuch says, in a case where you have Smuchin, you can administer Malchus. Malchus, emkein haya noeg din soru mora la'inyan achila rishono ula'inyan Malchus. V'lo amrinan kimen d'lo mishkachas misa al achila hashnia putter gam al harishona. If that's the case, then even after the shagal, even la'achar shagalu Sanhedrin, even though you can't administer capital punishment anymore, you'd still have the possibility of corporal punishment. And we don't say that simply because there's no capital punishment on the second violation, there's going to be no Malchus on the first violation. Ela al achila harishona chaya Malchus tamit. After ein noheg dina nefashos, and gain chayev tamid malchus miyesh based in smuchin v'chein nirali. The Menachos Chinuch says, don't try to claim that once there's no onesh of misa, there's going to be potential. There's not going to be any punishment of malchus either, because they're two separate things. One, and they have separate requirements. In one instance, the requirement is the Sanhedrin sitting in the Lishkas HaKazis. For that, you're going to need an Onesh Misa. But for the Malchus, you can continue to have that even after you no longer have the possibility of the capital punishment. But Yoros HaMeach, in source number 12, disagrees with this assertion of the Menachos Chinuch. Lefizeh nereh lanu. The exact Lefizeh is something that Ezra Shem will get back to next week, but not right now. Lefizeh, according to the analysis that I present here, Nira lanu d'gam la'achar ha'churban rizmanat ha'naim d'hayu smuchin ulu malchus malkin b'chol zman. Even in the times of the Tanoim, after the Churban Bayis, where there were still smuchin, there were still people who had smicha. We still had people with the title Rebbe, not just Rav. And we know that they were still able to administer corporal punishment because they were smuchin, because of Rabban Pasha's Maseh. We call Malkom malchus d'bensor umore leka. Nonetheless, this particular malchus of bensor umore, not a chance. That they would not be able to administer. Kima de'ena achila ha'mevia lidei shvichus damim, because this is not an achila that brings to ultimate shvichus damim, paralleling the language of the Ramban in source number 6, sh'shtei ha'achilos mevios lishpoch damo, because you don't have an achila that will ultimately lead towards capital punishment, ta'leka mikdash ve'ein machayvin misa, therefore you can't have malchus either, because there's no mikdash and you can't have misa. So you have this machlokas among the achronim, as to whether or not Malchus can exist independent of Misa. Now, Gomet Rabbi Kiveger, was he asserting, like the Menachos Chinuch, that you can have Malchus even in a circumstance where there's no possibility of Misa, or was he suggesting something less, Jerry, like you were saying, that simply there are circumstances where you will have Malchus without Misa? That I'm not 100% sure. But at the very least, we have this Machlokas Achronim as to whether or not there can be Malchus in the absence of Misa, and perhaps that would raise questions as well as to whether or not Tosis' assertion that this really is a lav shenitan la'asharas Misa based in is correct. Certainly, if you're going to say that both of these achilas lead to the ultimate end result of capital punishment, then it would certainly be logical to say that this is an asharas shenitan, a lav shenitan la'asharas Misa based in. However, if you would say that this is that they're separate, then it's not necessarily so pasha. And then just one final thing, and we'll close with this. Similar to the machlokas that we have between the Menachos Chinuch and the Oros HaMeach about whether or not you can have corporal punishment without capital punishment, we have a similar machlokas as to whether or not you can have capital punishment without corporal punishment. Source number 13 is the opposite case. Yeah, should we save this for next week? Do it quickly?
No, you have it.
Extra time. Okay, good. Kam pashal fi anias daiti de imkodem gmar din rishon barach fi achar ze nitva shenis beedus hashnia de gomrin dino lamalkus fi achar ze lektala. Ve ein tzarech shiye achilo shnia davka achar malkus harishon. The Menachos Chinuch describes the following case. Normally speaking, he eats once, And then they give him Malchus, and then he does it again. And then they give him the second punishment, the capital punishment, right? What if you have a circumstance, that Menachas Chinuch says, where he did it once, they said you should really be chay of Malchus, you should receive corporal punishment, but he runs away. So they don't give him corporal punishment, and then he eats a second time. So now what would we say? Would we say that, look, because we never gave him Malchus the first time, we can't give him capital punishment now, and we'll just have to give him corporal punishment? Or would we say, no, he's violated twice, and because he's violated twice, let's just give him both punishments. The Menachas Chinuch says, if he ran away the first time, then you just give him both punishments this time. You give him the Malchus, you give him the Miso. We're not concerned about the fact that the second time he violated, to formulate it more precisely, we're not concerned about the fact that there was no Malchus between the first time he violated and the second time he violated. And once again, the Or Sameach disagrees. Source 14. Betosvos hekshu denelav mitzora mora di loke alav shenita lasharas misa space neki dlanuch alav li deasrayas misa kod loki mitzora mora alav delos sokol aladam yoyin sham. Again, we're not going to get into that. That was the continuation of Tosvos. Ve'eno move on cloud the mitzora mora malchus who may etzem ha'avera. This is the third line of source number 14. So I don't understand what Tosvos are saying, because when it comes to mitzora mora, the malchus is part of the avera itself. The alzen is chayev misa, because that is why he receives capital punishment. Why? If he's so invested in this path that even after he received a corporal punishment, he's still going right back to it and he's continuing those habits, that's how we know that we're justified in Horeg al Shem Sofa. L'chein neherag al Shem Sofa. Says that's why, because he's so bad that he's willing to continue doing it after he received Malchus, that's why he receives Misa. So for him, as the Or Sameach stipulates, he says it's part of Etzem Ha'avera. You can't have Misa without Malchus, because part of the whole process leading to Misa is the fact that he had Malchus beforehand. Now, of course, that's the Or Sameach L'shitaso, that once again, this is one large continuum. It's part of one larger process. Both of them are Shtei Ha'achilos Mivios Lidei Shvichos Damim, like we saw in the Ramban. The Minchas Chinuch, who we saw before, thinks that you can have Malchus independent of Misa, is once again L'shitaso. He views them as distinct. So he also thinks that on the flip side, you can have Misa that exists independent of Malchus. But the Or Sameach views them as one larger continuum. So in short, we have this conceptual question. Are they part of one large continuum, or should they be viewed as distinct? We saw this expressed in the questions within the Sefer HaMitzvos. Is this a Lav Shebeklolos or not a Lav Shebeklolos? Should this be counted as one mitzvah or two mitzvos? Should this be viewed as a Lav Shenitan Lazarus Misa Spastin? And this week we also saw two Nafkaminas. Can you have a case of Malchus where there is no potential for Misa, namely the case where the Spastin is no longer in Yerushalayim, so they can't administer Misa? Can you have Malchus in such a circumstance? Menachas Chinuch says yes, the Or Sameach says no. And on the flip side, can you potentially have Misa without Malchus occurring beforehand? Menachas Chinuch, once again, L'shitaso says yes, because they're distinct, and the Or Sameach, L'shitaso says it's one larger continuum, so you cannot. Next week, Be'ezra Hashem, we will discuss some of the requirements, some of the things that need to be in place for the Malchus to occur. Once again, we will see there are a number of interesting machlokos among the Rishonim and the Achronim that perhaps once again highlight this larger question of whether they should be viewed as two distinct items or as part of one larger continuum. Shkoyach.